Well, just so that you guys like have this really false view of who we are, I'm going to start on time. It's not really true to this normally, but I figure why not? You're here, which is glorious. Forgive me, I'm going to shut off lights because this is really dim with that light and you can't do the other. And pretty much everything I have today is PowerPoint. And I don't really have even handouts for you. I apologize for how dim that makes it. If you want some paper, I do have blank, but we're just going to be talking about what kind of church FBC is. And before we start, I was really wanting feedback from y'all. We can welcome this. It's the Gergens!
It is.
My wife! And the Millers! Somewhere. And Kristen. Good dad.
You waited for me.
Wow, and they just keep on coming.
So I was
going
to try to start on time.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen.
No. I know. I just thought, we can start on time and fool all these people. And they do keep on coming. I don't know how to feel. That's Tim and Lauren. We'll wait.
Can that overhead be moved on the right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, roll it further back
to
the window.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you, Wayne.
Johnny, you need
anything? I'm good. Thank you, Mario. Appreciate it.
Hey, Wayne. When these arm things over, you go in the beach.
So, hey, good to have you guys. I'm sorry you're front row. My name is Sean Plesnick. It's a joy to have you guys here. This is Life at FBC, and we're just talking about what kind of church FBC is, both philosophically, a wee bit doctrinally, a lot more heart-wise than principle. I mean, it's not really going to be, this is not like a doctrinal study of what we teach. This is more, what's our church about? And kind of what's the heart of our church and our elders and deacons? And where do we want to go from where we are now? And how did we get to where we are? And those kind of things. So today we're doing a little bit of history, week five. Not just isn't what happens to FBC if you stay here 5 years, but what happens to you? Like, what's our goals for people if they stay here a long time? Those kind of things. And it's kind of common questions, but this is the first time we've ever done a class like this, so welcome. You're guinea pigs, all of you. And I would love to hear what kind of questions you guys came wanting answered, and that'll help me know if I have the right things in these 5 weeks planned, or if I need to make some adjustments. You going to give me any feedback on what you're looking for?
I kind of had a question, because I was just from different people that have asked, is how to go about the whole membership thing.
Okay, we will hit that. Absolutely, good. This is, obviously, I'm not going to be giving you the answers to your questions right now, so I don't want to dash your expectations right at the beginning. Anything else?
John, is where the church plans to go, like in the next year or two, is that in the plan?
Yes, that'll be week five. So, okay. You can plan with what day you want to come back to hear that. Lori.
Maybe where the church has been in the past.
Okay.
Like its history.
Absolutely. We'll cover that today. Feeling good so far. Yeah. Kristen.
I just had some questions about, like, I looked through the info of, like, what the beliefs and that kind of things. Some just different topics. Would that be something that I would talk to you about, like, separate? Or
yeah, if we don't hit that today, ask me afterwards.
Okay.
So. All right. Other things. I'm feeling so excited. You're probably wondering, what else is he going to have to say then? Let me pray and then we'll open up. Father, thanks for this time and for these sweet people who have gathered this morning and arisen early to be here and to learn more about FBC. We pray your blessing on this time and that it would be helpful to them. And that we would have fun together and grow together as well. Amen.
Amen.
All right. Well, today is all about what kind of church is this? And we're starting off with history. Where did we come from? It was not the planet Mars. We actually started in, wow, that's small print. August 2003. Sorry for those of you in the back row. At Rod and Beth Shackelford's home. Rod's one of the elders here. There was about 40 of us who started back then. And that was probably with kids. And we were in Rod and Beth's home for 2 weeks. And then we transitioned, by the grace of God, to North Temecula Industrial Park, which was this really ugly, unclean industrial building. You can kind of see like there's roll-up doors with the kids area. What you don't see is like there's ants along the walls that we pray for continually and large insects. And so God was very gracious in providing that. This was our little worship area in the middle, and it was like the open cubicle. You know, if you imagine a big area with cubicles and all the cubicles removed, it had the posts, and then it had offices ringing it. So there were doors all the way around the worship center, which were kind of uniquely designed. Anyway.
But you had a pulpit there.
We did. We did, yeah. That's what makes it a church, isn't it? Yeah. Steve Lawson too, yeah. Right after that, well, I'm trying to think, the date will come up. In May 2004, we actually hired Marcelo Tolopilo. He was the first official teaching pastor at FBC. He had been doing an itinerant ministry, doing camps and conferences, speaking at those, and had kind of planted at FBC just right around the time of its start, a little bit after, and he and his wife Valerie. And they were here for about 2 years, and he served as an elder and transitioned out in May 2006 because he really missed having an impact on the broader Universal Church and wanted to go back into doing conferences and retreats, and just loved doing that and really missed it. And so we were sad to see him go, and he transitioned out. And that took us, well, during his time, I'm trying to be semi-chronological here, we moved to this building. This was not too long after, actually, Marcelo came. We moved to Monta Vista, which is right off Hunter Road in Winchester. And this was the fun time. We met during the summer at 1 p.m., which is a real, you know, obviously visitor-friendly time. people love being there during the summer at 1, yeah. The AC even broke a couple times. We'd open these doors, and there's some over here, and he'd be preaching right here, and the wind would whip through, and like his notes would go, which was really fun. So, quite memorable. We were there actually just waiting for this location to open up. They were building this place at the time, and we moved here in September of 04. And I'm like waiting to see what's going to come up next. So this has been our home since September of 04, and actually, not too long after we moved here, we hired Steve and Jessica Mulkey. Steve Mulkey, actually. We didn't hire Jessica. And we hired Steve to really develop our worship ministry. And he was here for about 2 years. And maybe I'm doing the math, 2.5 years. And did a fantastic job. I mean, the band we have today is really the result of his time with us. And he and his wife are from Seattle, and all their families there. And they really wanted to go home, and a church that was kind of filled and led by friends of theirs began and planted. And they were invited back to serve as a worship leader at that plant, and they were really feeling called to go home. So we sadly said goodbye to them just really recently. So some of y'all probably, if you were here for a little bit of time, know or remember Steve. So I just want to mention him as we're doing history. But now we'll do the beautiful transitions. Okay, and then in November 2006, we hired Chris and Jean Mueller. Chris, not Jean. And Chris has been the teaching pastor here since November and is doing a great job, and y'all are familiar with him. So that is a brief thing on history. Any questions?
Well, where did the group of you come from that were meeting at the Shackelford's house? Were you from another church? Or?
Yeah, we were all mainly involved in another church around here.
Okay.
Yeah. Affiliation. Who are we affiliated with? Really none. sorry. It's actually a question that people ask. Who are you a part of? If we were on the East Coast, this would be like, you guys are freaks. And on the West Coast, this is fairly normal. On the West Coast, this is the question. What is a denomination? Well, why would you want to be a part of one? And a denomination, just in case you're unfamiliar, I like this definition. It just says it's an association or fellowship of congregations within a religion that have the same beliefs or creed, that engage in similar practices, and cooperate with each other to develop and maintain shared enterprises. And there is absolutely nothing wrong with denominations. In fact, I have a lot of good friends who serve in them. And just, we're not. Why are we not? That's kind of the question that's usually asked. And, I mean, on one side, there's a little bit of a doctrinal thing where we'd say we do believe in the autonomy of the local church, that's to be independent and not controlled by others. But truthfully, not all denominations control local churches. Southern Baptists don't. The PCA really don't, particularly. Sovereign Grace doesn't. And so there's some that don't. But why haven't it? Why haven't we? Well, it gives us freedom to kind of choose who we partner with. We do have the liberty to then partner with Christ our Redeemer, or Christ the Redeemer, which meets at Chaparral, and to, you know, really enjoy Eric Landry, and to talk to the guys at Rancho and enjoy them. And they used to be Dutch Reformed. They're some other Reformed now. And, you know, to friends with Murrieta Valley Church, which is a Southern Baptist church, and just kind of to have a wide variety of friendships that we feel like sometimes that can be excluded. And then the third purely pragmatic reason is we haven't really seen a tangible benefit to really becoming part of a denomination. When they offer to like give us a building for it, we might be fine. So anyway, I'm being joking. So that's kind of why we're not affiliated and who we're not affiliated with, who we are. It really gives us the open hand to participate with whoever we want, and also not to be committed to participating with people who would be in our denomination but not be like-hearted. So there's kind of a joyful freedom in that. You are welcome, by the way, to interrupt with questions anytime you want. Raise your hand, shout out, interrupt me, whatever you like. I don't mean to drone on. So if we have no affiliations, how do you know what we're about? So I just thought I'd try and give you pictures of guys we like. These are actually a monergism, and they're a little like, what do you call those, caricatures of different guys? And we like all these people. I just chose contemporaries. There's also absolutely, you know, ancients. But like Moeller and Mahaney and Piper and MacArthur and Murray and Dever and Keller and Sproul, and there's others, but these guys had pictures. Yeah, these are kind of the guys we like, which would be Reformed, fairly Reformed, a heart for the world, yeah, heart for history, you know, gospel-centered. That's kind of the trend. Lauren?
When you say Reformed, can you...
No. You want me to define what I mean by that?
Well, just give it, yeah.
Okay, give me 1 second, because we'll actually hit that. So I won't forget. So this is kind of where we're at on this. Just for if you're going like, well, who do they like? And if one of these guys you really dislike, you might not be always as comfortable. But I would say that most of these guys, we'd say like, well, except for him. He's really cool.
Yeah, that's the one I don't know.
Oh, really? You know, he's great. He's the head of Banner of Truth. And he's done a lot. He's more of a writer than a speaker. But when he speaks, he's actually really good. His books are phenomenal. Hey, guys. So, anyway, love all of them. All of them, including us, including him, all have flaws. So, leadership. Leadership of FBC. Who's in leadership? What do we believe about leadership? In the church today, there is a ton of different models. Everywhere you go, it seems like churches are run a little bit different. I tried to kind of systematize what the different models are, and then I'll tell you what ours are, is... there's the congregational model, right? This is probably more of an East Coast thing still, although you do find it some where the church body is the one who votes on everything. Typically, it's the people who are members are the ones who kind of vote on budget, hire, fire, sometimes as much as the color of the carpet. And that would be like a congregational model where they kind of lead the church as a group, as a unit. And then there's the Episcopal method. I just chose him because that's a great picture. But that's not actually the model of leadership. Episcopal method would be you have guys dressed like him who basically preside over areas. So this would be the bishops, the archbishops, the ones who kind of, I don't want to say rule.
Area?
What's that?
You mean geographical?
Geographical, yeah. So there would be the California archbishop who then rules over the bishop of... you know, the smaller section of San Diego. And then the San Diego guy has authority and input into all of the churches in that region. So that would be more of an Episcopal model. Then there's the corporate model. That would be the one guy who's kind of running the church. And that, you know, I would say many places. I see it's sad. I don't want to like name places, so I'll do a generic. A lot of Calvary chapels are run this way. Not all Calvary chapels are, but a lot of Calvaries, at least in the Northwest where I was, were run this way, where kind of the teaching pastor at that church was the guy who kind of made all the major decisions. And sometimes he had like an elder board or a deacon board who was a sounding board for him, but he was kind of the final yay or nay type guy. So that's another. I just love photos. Okay, diaconate. This is not a right view of a deacon either. But
hold on.
Yeah, exactly. That's really not what's biblical, and hopefully not practiced. But sometimes you'll talk about like there's a board of deacons that run the church, and that's probably more of a Baptistic thing. General Baptists, Southern Baptists are the two. I don't know if Reformed Baptists do that. But it would be kind of more their model, and it's basically kind of like an eldership, but the qualifications are sometimes a little bit different, and their realms of authority are sometimes a little bit different. They're a little more business oriented usually.
Now, John, would that be like where the deacons serve as a board of elders?
Yeah, essentially.
After a church like that.
Yeah. So, although sometimes it'll be they serve as a board of elders, but the elders aren't like shepherding elders. The elders are like, or the deacons are more like they do the business decisions.
Really,
and then the
like
shepherding is all the pastoral staff.
Trustees.
They're more like trustees.
Trustees would be a good description. Yeah. So, and then there's an elder, eldership, and not Mormons, not the really old ones. This would be sometimes called deacons in other churches where they actually shepherd. Whereas, you know, then we're talking about like, well, what is a biblical elder thing? Which is what we're striving for and practicing probably more imperfectly than we know. What do we believe about elders and what it should look like? Well, that it's a group, a plurality. Not just the corporate, but a group of biblically qualified men who are called elders. Biblically qualified would be 1 Timothy 3, Titus 1, 2 Timothy 2. Unanimously, equally and autonomously shepherd, oversee, and lead the local church. Unanimously means you all agree. Equally means nobody has a bigger vote. Autonomously means you're not influenced by an outside episcopate type guy. And you shepherd, which means you pastor, you oversee, which means you're kind of like taking care of people and watching what goes on, and you lead. You give direction and vision to where things are headed, the local church. And the passage that's up there that's totally illegible, it would be 1 Peter 5:1-3. And that unites it. And I actually have to walk forward to read it, so that's how bad that is. It says, "Therefore I exhort the elders among you, shepherd or pastor, the flock of God among you, exercising oversight, not under compulsion, but voluntarily, according to the will of God, not for sordid gain, but with eagerness, nor yet as lording it over those allotted to your charge, but proving to be examples to the flock." That kind of gets at the heart. Kristen?
I just have a question. Like, if all the pastors have equal say, what if there's an issue that there's like different views on how would you...
That never happens. No, that happens all the time. It's a really good question. You know, basically, if there's different views, first, we're going to defer to the Bible. Second, we're going to seek to defer to guys' strengths and spiritual gifts. So, like, I'll use the example of Robert Dodson. He has a total heart and passion for kids and children's ministry. And if he's feeling really strong on how something should go, I have a 5-month-old. You know, I might have a differing opinion, but I can trust that, you know, he probably not just has more experience, but has their best interest in heart. And that's kind of how we practice. That doesn't mean like it's always a snap deference. And sometimes we have to really talk it through. But that's kind of the process we use. Yeah.
Who guides Chris? No, no, Chris is the pastor, right? I don't know what pastor, teacher, elder, guru, whatever you call it. But who guides him? Like, if Chris would walk in and say, "No, I just really think I want to do a series on fixing your car."
Yeah.
And you would say, "Chris, we just don't need a series on fixing cars."
I kind of do, actually. I have an issue with my car.
But now, how do you really... How would you resolve? How would you guide the guy that's up in the pulpit?
We were working through an issue at our last elder meeting. Well, actually, for the last two. And, you know, he brought an idea forward for how to, you know, look at doing a new ministry. And the more we talked about it, we kind of were like, well, what's at the core of what you're asking? Yeah, and I'm trying not to be specific because obviously we shut it down too. Well, we didn't shut it down, but what happened is we said, well, this is it's at the core. These are the effects of what you're suggesting. And I don't know that getting those things that are positive are worth sacrificing these other things. You know, that, forgive me for the abstractions. And so let's think about how we can do these good things without sacrificing this, which pretty much was a demise to his idea, but kind of still embraced the heart of what he was seeing. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Now, can I
go ahead.
Play a little? But suppose there are, I don't know, two guys for it, three guys against it.
Yeah.
Okay. And you just couldn't, you know, make up your mind. There was clearly a couple guys that saw, hey, Chris, this is a great idea. We should go with it. Three other guys saying, no, you know, we don't want to do this.
Yeah.
How would you work that out? You know, you said defer, but I mean, let's say it's an idea.
Right. If there's new, one, it is an extended thing, and we would defer the decision, truthfully, and we have. To where it's not.
You're going to rock, paper, scissors.
Yeah. So I mean,
I've heard about churches that will either say the pastor will stand up and say, "Look, I'm the guy. You go with my idea," or other churches said, look, there's a time frame, we're going to decide by Wednesday.
Well, there's a reality. There's a reality that if, you know, I'm going to choose me rather than Chris, if I'm continually bringing up ideas, and the other guys are like, I'm like, maybe that's not a good fit long term for the church. You know, if that was happening repeatedly, you know, through a couple of years, I don't think that's what you're really talking about. You're just saying there's this one issue.
Right.
Yeah. And if there's not a biblical thing that's a preference thing, then we do just hash it out. And what you'll probably find that's frustrating is we're never quick. We're rarely quick. Particularly if somebody's saying, hey, I have this idea for a ministry that we want to do that'll care for these people that just on the surface sounds really good. Sometimes it takes a long time because just what you said, different guys will have different opinions and we'll want to groups, that sounds weird to say, we'll want to talk to those people, and different elders would, and just to work it through and figure out how to do it in a way that we can have unity. Mm-hmm. So, it's slow, sometimes.
John, on that board, how's the accountability amongst each other?
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, I know that I understand the concept.
Yeah.
Of what you're talking about. I mean, is somebody holding Chris accountable? Is somebody holding Rod accountable amongst the board themselves?
Yeah.
Or do they kind of view themselves as maybe above that?
No. We're open license to ask any question. And do.
Among the elders.
Yeah. And by outsiders, truthfully. So, yeah. So, outsiders sounds horrible. Please scratch that. Yeah.
So what decisions are being made to down to what level? You're talking about the color of the carpet?
No. Well, I'll try not to.
Well, so in the event that a building, the church gets into a building, like...
Basically, if we were moving that way, to purchase land is a great example.
Yeah.
You know, when we have something that comes up that way, how will we make that decision? Because that's such not a biblical issue, apart from maybe like, maybe a wisdom issue, like is it the right time? Is it the right amount of money? Is it the right location? Those are preference wisdom things, but they're not like, if you look in Chronicles, you know, there's nothing. So how do we do that? Typically, we'll task one elder to work with guys who are really gifted in that field, interior design for carpet or whatever. Yeah.
Well, do you find projects like that get installed if there's lack of unity between the elders? I mean, do you find that you're saying things take a while?
Yeah.
But I guess I'm talking more on the day-to-day logistical stuff.
Yeah.
Does stuff get done, or is it?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I hope so. We meet every 2 weeks, and sometimes every week. It just kind of depends on what's going on. Probably on the day to day practical running of the church, I basically do a lot of the administration for the church as well. So I would be the one responsible if things are going slow on that level.
You're just given lessons by the board to.
Yeah, and I bounce stuff off of them. One thing you'll find out about us is we're huge electronic email, and we don't have an office, so nobody ever drops by. We have the news mailing list. We have them for elders. We have them for deacons. We have a lot of internal communication conduits, so that's kind of a major way we communicate. A lot of the guys actually travel, and so we spend a lot of phone time as well. My hours on the phone are... Does that help?
It does.
Okay. Where are we? What's a deacon? Similar in character to an elder, but distinct in gifting. I don't know what your experience of deacons has been in the past, but this is really what we believe, that deacons are just like elders, but differently gifted. They have the same character qualifications in 1 Timothy 3 as an elder does, but their purpose in the church is different. It kind of starts here. They're to help meet the needs of others, whether physical or spiritual, in whatever manner necessary. They share with the elders a concern for the needs of the congregation under the guidance of the eldership, aid in relieving those varied needs. And they're really, their heart is just to serve believers, to serve the church, to serve the community. And that's what all of our current deacons are about and passionate about. So they do a lot more care of single women, widows, people in the church who are in need. They do a lot of that kind of stuff, and we're extremely thankful for them. So who are they, just in case? We've been throwing around names already. You can kind of see the illegible names. This is Robert Dodson, me, John Plesnick, Bob Richardson, Chris Mueller, Rod Shackelford, and Peter Spires. We're the six elders currently. We're not the six elders forever in the sense that God may bring other guys. We do believe eldership is a life calling because it's determined by gift and by call of God. So we don't have a term limit. Rod won't be rotating off in another year. He's there until either, you know, either. He's there until he disqualifies himself. That sounds bad. He's there, you know, unless he should disqualify himself, feel that he can't keep up, because his family's a priority, you know, that those, that his own walk with God, if his service in eldership and to the ministry of the church would be causing those things to be hindered, and we'd be coming alongside him too, but encouraging him. And actually, a couple of the different guys have taken like 6 month sabbaticals, just saying, I need to devote this time to my wife, or, you know, business is killing me right now, I need to back out. And that's totally okay. It's not a referendum on their character or ministry or anything. Yeah?
How was this group of elders originally selected? Was this a branch of a church and you guys started it? Or did the body come together and say, we feel you meet the biblical qualifications of an elder?
Chicken bones. We threw them. Sorry. What we did is we actually got input from the body probably about 6 months into it and recognized four of these guys plus Marcelo when he was here, and they became the elders. Maybe that was 9 months even into the establishment of our church, and that was by kind of recognition from the body of their gifting service within the church, that they were already kind of elding, and so they became functionally and officially the elders at that point. For the first beginning of the church, we didn't have any. We met as a large ministry team, about 10-12 people who were all kind of committed to doing different things. And so that was what our initial leadership was until the body recognized and affirmed a group of elders. And then, you know, occasionally we've sought input from the body on new elders and people that they, you know, recognize and see having the gifting and calling of an elder. And okay, then we'll sift through that input. So that's kind of how it worked originally. Yeah.
If at any time we had a question or a concern within the church, could we feel free to go to any of you?
I hope so. That'd be horrible. Yeah, please. Yeah, absolutely. Peter's the only one who's really... No, I'm just kidding. Every one of those guys is totally approachable and helpful. Not always are we like your best answer. We're often woofully ignorant. And we'll be like, you know, you'd be a lot better served to talk to this person than to me.
Okay.
But yeah, by all means, seek us out if you have any questions. Yeah. Then the deacons.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, please.
You don't have to answer this. Are these guys all have their own jobs separate? Are they compensated by the church?
Chris and I are. Rod does medical sales. Robert does medical sales. Peter's involved in healthcare for hospitals. And Bob's a farmer. So, yeah, he's the most hardworking. Ridiculously going to kill himself hardworking. Yeah. So, deacons. Who are they? David, basically, just in case you're wondering, their process is very similar to the elder process in terms of recognition. It was via seeking input from the body. It was actually later on that we had deacons, probably about 2.5-3 years into our existence, just as the need for them grew, then we began to seek input from the body as to who they should be. I think that that's really helpful to see, too. And Timothy, who is serving in Ephesus, which was an older church, has the instructions to find deacons, whereas you think about Titus, who's serving in Crete, there's no instructions. He's just instructed to appoint elders. But it was in a really young church, and the needs of a church do vary through their age. And I think that's kind of where we came out as well. So who are the deacons? George Shackelford, Steve West, Steve Schweitzer, Mark Polinski, David Hubbs, and Mario Lamone. And I read their names just in case you can't. Now, vocation, none of these guys are supported by the church, but all of them play a huge role. George is kind of semi-retired, but will never retire. Steve West is a fireman. Steve Schweitzer works with Bob Richardson in agriculture. Mark Polinski, he's done like 3 different jobs, and I forget which one he's at right now.
He started a new one.
Yeah, I know. I'm trying to think about what he does. He's like a manager of some sort, and more down like in the Carlsbad area now. David Hubbs works basically in commercial land acquisition for a nonprofit. And then Mario Lamone works at Abbott as kind of an electrical guru and facilities guy for Abbott. And so those are the deacons, and they really just, it sounds weird to say they rove, but they really are just really out and around with people and taking care of people in the body with needs, and are a wonderful group of guys. And most of their wives kind of serve alongside them in some way as well. So, any questions on them before I feel like I just blew through the deacons after that big round of questions on elders. So, okay, ministry leaders. Who leads ministries? I probably am excluding people from this list, so please forgive me. Steve Schweitzer leads the setup crew and teardown and kind of all the big structure, organizational, logistics type things Steve's a part of. Then we've got Tony Miller. Tony takes care of all of our greeting and hospitality, new visitors. The people who are friendly are really the result of Tony. That's we're thankful for him. Then we have Dave Hubbs. He and his wife Meredith are in charge of our children's ministry, and they just took that on in September and are still kind of learning the ropes and figuring out how to, you know, get the handle on everything that's going on and making that better. Then we have John Stead. He leads junior high ministry. And Sean Farrell leads high school ministry. Those are split. They actually used to be together until maybe August, September. And we just split those, and that's been good. And Eric Cobb, and he leads our college and career group. And so those are all, I'm thankful, incredibly thankful for each one of those guys. Who are wonderfully gifted to be serving where they are and are really a blessing. So those are kind of the different ministry leaders. I just wanted you to have a picture so that if you have a question or somebody who you want to get plugged in with one of those, you know who to point them to.
At a lot of churches, you'll see a distinct men or women's leadership.
Yeah.
Is that present?
I think I just said, yep. we've had different forms of that over time. So I'm going to just tell you, so the present form would be that the men's and women's stuff happens mainly through D groups. And I didn't put anything up there for D groups. And it's probably because the leadership in that's transitioning a little bit. How familiar, I'll just speak generally since there's more than you here. D groups are basically groups of men or women, but not together, who meet Mondays, Tuesdays, a couple other days during the week right now, and meet for a couple hours and work through things. It's high accountability, high relationship. And they used to gather at Chris's house, and he would do like a 30-minute, 20-minute kind of broad group interaction thing, and then they would split up into groups. And now they just recently kind of launched out on their own. And so that's why I'm like, it's kind of transitioned to where Chris used to be more, he would do men's and women's, and now it's decentralized. So Rod Shackelford and Scott Phillips are kind of coordinating the men's group, and Kathy Richardson and Crystal Moran are kind of coordinating the women's side. So I think, does that answer your question? Enough? Kind of. Okay, but beyond that, we don't really have a whole lot. There's a women's conference planned for May. Wow, yeah. They're dialed in.
My birthday, that's what
Is the D group something you can join like any time, or is that like a special time to come into a D group?
You can't, but yeah, most people. I'm kidding, Connie. Yeah, most of them, they're almost always open. We actually are there. We're just at the very beginning of starting them right now, and so if you wanted to plug into one, it would not be too late. They're supposed to be closed right now, just to kind of nurture and develop relationships within them. But we can get special exemptions to new.
Well, when does it change, or when is the new time?
Yeah, the new like one will switch over in May.
Okay.
Yeah. But generally, they're always open. Just as we've like kind of diversified and decentralized, mm-hmm. it'd be good to have groups knit a little bit more. So that's why we kind of closed them down. Yeah. Good questions. So now this is the part you've all been waiting for. You're really eager. What do we believe? Who are we about? What are we about? I can go real deep, but I'm not wanting to or going to. So I'm going to tell you kind of core things. These are the things that really drive us. And the first part of it is what is the gospel? And that we're big on. For personal application as well as probably you. But I believe this about my own heart, and all of us do, that our motives are more tainted, that sin is far deeper embedded into our hearts than we realize. And what's really terrifying about it is this second thing, that God is way more holy than I understand. Way more holy, way more dissatisfied with sin in my life than I understand. And that's what makes the cross so precious, because of how prevalent sin is. And because then Christ's death is the only reason for his acceptance of me. And so through the cross, Christ became our righteousness. And that's just the gospel. That's kind of the core of it. And what I mean by that is the typical view of Christianity is this, that you're obey and therefore you're accepted. So God's favor is the result of your personal holiness and lifestyle. And your incentive to holiness is your fear of rejection and condemnation by God. And that is really not what we're about. It's not what we believe is biblical. What's the actual biblical gospel? That I'm accepted through Christ and therefore I obey. In other words, my actions are really the result of Christ's love for me and his acceptance of me. And that I have God's favor through Christ and I want to delight him and I can't earn it. And me, probably you, definitely the other elders, all of us, can fall into a performance mentality where we feel like God is close to us when we're having a good quiet time and when we're praying a lot, and we feel like I just was displeasing to God because, you know, I sinned right there, which in an element is true, but it's not that I lost his favor, because I only came through Jesus Christ. And that's really how it is. And it's not when I was doing good stuff that God was specially pleased with me and pouring out blessings on me. You know, that's always constant. His acceptance of me doesn't vary depending on how my week's been. And so that's what we believe about the gospel. That my incentive to holiness is the fear of his dishonor. In other words, I'm not going to lose his love, but I don't want to bring reproach on his name. So that's kind of what we believe about the gospel. Maybe a little bit contrary. Hopefully not. It's what's biblical. Likewise, we believe that the gospel is not something we ever move past. And I like how this says it. A consistent side of the gospel makes us humbly recognize our total need for Christ's righteousness so that we deeply feel God's grace in our own lives and have great compassion and mercy on others. Really believe seeing our own sinfulness is the impetus to having grace on other people, to having compassion on them. It's because we know we're no better than them. A lack of compassion is the result of pride that says, I have something innately in me that makes me more worthy of God's love than this other person. And so compassion is the result of realizing there's nothing in me that God valued more. You know, it's really just by grace through Christ. And so I can pour out total love on that person, regardless of where they're at with Christ right now, because they're just like me. Different view, different look, but same thing, same heart. So that's it. Tim Keller writes, we don't get saved by believing the gospel and then grow by trying hard to live according to biblical principles. Believing the gospel is not only the way to meet God, but also the way to grow into Him. So we do imperfectly, and we're still trying to learn this and do better at this. But we're trying to have a gospel focus, not like every message has an altar call gospel focus, but a gospel focus in our preaching and in our conversations and everything, so that we're remembering Christ's compassion on us and our need for Him. Does that make sense? So that's kind of the core of what we want to be about. We're imperfect in it, but it's what we're driving towards. What else do we believe? I'm going way basic, okay? This is not something that should be a shocker here, but anyway. The baptism is something that believers do in obedience to Jesus, and that it doesn't save them or provide a second blessing. So baptism doesn't save you. It doesn't give you the Spirit. That comes at confession and salvation. But baptism is required, in a sense. It's commanded. So if you haven't been baptized and you are a Christian, you should be baptized. In fact, March 2nd, you can be baptized. If you haven't been, be baptized. We're big on that. Okay. What else? The church discipline is so essential for your spiritual health that you should not go to a church that wouldn't kick you out. Okay? We really believe that. You don't often see church discipline practiced in churches. Thankfully, I struggle to remember times when we've had to announce much from the front, but we do believe in it. Matthew 18, steps 3 and 4 are good. All the time, hopefully daily, steps 1 and 2 are being practiced where believers are confronting one another. Step 2 is when a couple people go alongside them. And that happens a lot here. And thankfully, people generally have been soft. We've actually had people who've said, you know, I'm not a Christian, which is sad, but it's good because it's a recognition of where their heart is, that they're not self-deceived. So, you know, if this happens, don't be surprised. If someone confronts you, welcome it. It's for your health. Don't go somewhere where they won't get rid of you. Okay? That's just a general rule. And that's like meaning it, they get rid of you with love rather than like, you know, that's not what we're talking about. So what do we believe? We want to be known for our humility. And I love that because it's so contrary or self-contrary. I had told one guy this and he totally laughed at me. Because it sounds like we want to be proud about it. Yeah. It's not quite what we mean. But we want our church to be known for the people that are really humble. And that sounds really weird to say, but it just means really it's the result of that whole sinful thing. You know, how are you humble? Well, it's because you have a true view of who you are inside. And we want that to be pervade our church. Likewise, we want to show others as much grace as we have received, which is a ton, way more than we realize, because God's holiness is way more than we realize. So that's kind of, in a nutshell, the big things of what we believe. Now, what else? We believe you should read the doctrinal statement of any church you're thinking of attending. You can pick one up at the info table for us, or you can read it online, www.faith, and then a little dash, like a hyphen, bible.net. So read ours if you have questions, but you're probably still wondering what we believe. And I hate labels, so please forgive me. I hate labels because you each have a definition to a label. If I say, you know, we're Calvinist, well, some of you are going to say, well, they hate evangelism. You know, or some of you are going to say, well, they think everybody, God ordains people to go to hell. Or some of you are going to say, well, they're probably fuzzy on atonement because, you know, Calvinists vary so much in that. Everybody has their definitions, and I really hate labels, but I'm going to give them to you anyway. And please forgive this and read our doctrinal statement to see what's actually true. And so now I'll answer Lauren's question of what it means to be Reformed. We're Reformed mainly. What I mean by that is we have a classical Reformed view of salvation, especially. So that God is active in salvation, that He draws people to Himself, that His grace is irresistible, that we're totally depraved. that's a classic Reformed position. We're not Reformed when it comes to baptism. That would be paedobaptism, infant baptism. We're not there. We're not Reformed when it comes to eschatology. That would be amillennial. We're not there. We'll hit those things. But in terms of especially soteriology, we're Reformed. And that's when people say Reformed, that's typically what they mean, although there are people who even especially call themselves now the true Reformed, the TRs. And that would mean that they're like hardcore all the way, paedo, amill, all that. But now, because of how hard it is to label each other, label ourselves, people will say we're Reformed, and then they'll add other things that are not always Reformed. Does that make sense? So you kind of have to see the whole list, which is why we're going to keep going. We're Calvinistic, but not hyper, which doesn't mean we're full of sugar. It just means we believe in evangelism deeply. We evangelize like we're Arminian, and we sleep like we're Calvinist. So that's kind of how we are. We love God. We trust that He draws people. At the same time, we believe that we're totally responsible and the agent of God to share the gospel with other people. And we're still working to grow with that. We're dispensational, kinda. So that means that we don't think the church has replaced Israel. We think God continues to have a plan for Israel, that His promises to them in the Old Testament will be made true. That doesn't mean like we have these seven dispensations from Schofield or anything, okay? We're not really where He was. What else? We're premillennial and we're pro-rapture. In other words, we think... Yeah. So I said, if you really want to know where I read the doctrinal statement. Premillennial, we believe there's a 1,000-year literal reign of Christ that's going to happen on earth. Rapture, to my knowledge, actually, I know, all of the elders are pre-trib personally. As a church, we don't have a rapture position. We're pro. You know, because that's a tough issue to define and be confident that you're on the right line. You can be, I can't say a-trib. You can be, let's see, post-trib, you know, mid-trib, pro-rap. You know, that's such not the thing to be focused on as a Christian. I want Christ, this is me, I want Christ to come before the rapture happens. I want to be prepared to live through it if He doesn't, and to bring glory to Him either way. So that's kind of where we're at.
John, has the church taken a position against preterism yet?
Well, if you were talking about full, yes, partial, no. So, does that answer?
What's preterism?
Look, that's beyond this class, and we're going to keep going, okay? Yeah, ask me afterwards. What else are we? We're cessationist, kinda. In other words, we believe that the sign gifts, the supernatural gifts, were done, that those were for the purpose of affirming the message, the original message of the apostles, and that those weren't intended to be continuous for the church. We're not full cessationists. We believe other spiritual gifts do continue, but that particular gifts, the more miraculous supernatural gifts, were given for the purpose of establishing the authenticity of the message. And there's a big section on a doctrinal statement on why, so I'll let you read that. Baptistic. We're pro-baptism. Actually, we're pro-evangelism, and then consequently we think people should be baptized and discipled. History-loving, future-looking. What I mean by that is we dig the Puritans, but we realize that a lot of people today can't read them. kind of boring now. And so we love the Reformation. We love the English Reformation with the Puritans, Edwards. But at the same time, we're recognizing that that's not the best way of speaking to people today. And that we need to be aware of culture and to speak in ways that are understandable to people around us. And even to be looking ahead to say what's coming down the road, both positive and negative. What do we need to guard against that's coming? What do we need to be excited about and capitalizing on for the sake of the gospel and kingdom? So, dislikers of Pharisees and antinomians. It's not exactly a label, but it's a heart. Hypocrites, that's a Pharisee. And we're not big on hypocrites, like other churches would say they are. I don't know. But really, we aren't. you know, whether it's in our own lives, I mean, call us on it. Antinomians is somebody who says there's no law, that we have total liberty to do whatever we want because of Christ. That's probably not wise either. So we're not really fond of either side of that extreme. We're trying to walk the middle of being culturally relevant, truly biblical, and with a heart for the lost, without being a hypocrite, without being a libertine. That's kind of there. We believe most that we're flawed sinners desperately in need of grace, that the gospel, especially this, that the gospel is for all people, regardless of socioeconomics or ethnicity, and that the church and our relationships in it should reflect that. In other words, it's not good if all your friends are people who are just like you. It's not good that if you're only evangelizing and reaching out to people who are just like you. Because Revelation 5 has people of every tribe, nation, and tongue. It's a fully ethnic church in heaven. And ideally, that's what it should be here. Now, the reality is we have a skewed demographic in our valley. And I don't expect that our church is going to be any different than our valley. But to the extent that our valley is diverse, so should our church be. So, last, that I think this is last, that we can appreciate other Christians and their gospel labors, even when they're unlike us in belief and practice. And this is Paul's heart in Philippians 1, that I'm in prison, this is what he says, I'm in prison, and people are preaching the gospel who are doing it to make me jealous. In other words, they're doing it for the wrong reasons. But then he says, but I can rejoice because they're preaching the gospel. And that's kind of our heart is, you know what, there's a lot of churches in our valley that preach the gospel. They're not like us in practice. Some of them aren't like us in doctrine, but they're preaching Jesus. And so we really do rejoice in that and believe that there's other Christians in those churches and we can partner with those churches. And maybe we can't partner with them, but we can still rejoice when somebody comes to know Christ through them. You know, and so that's really kind of our heart on that, which means we don't always participate with people, but it doesn't mean when we don't participate that we're negative towards them. You know what I mean? Just we are excited and probably even more so on an individual level, seek out relationships with people in other churches than we do on a corporate level. Even Chris and I are working to establish relationships with other pastors in the valley, just on a personal level, regardless of what our churches do. And are excited to hear when people are growing and being transformed. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where we're at, because the kingdom is way bigger than us. Okay, yeah, that's... Wait, go back. Okay, so that's as much as I'm going into on what we believe. If you want more than that, you can read a doctrinal statement, you can ask me afterwards. Is there something I can clarify briefly on this?
Going back to the leadership, yeah. I noticed that there are people in here who are leading Bible studies that maybe aren't necessarily an elder or a deacon. Mm-hmm. How do you determine who you're going to allow to teach this?
They would need to be capable. You wouldn't want to go and have it be really boring. So that would be one qualification. And then the other one would be that they would be a member. So, and by being a member, kind of what we ask for membership, this will come up another week, but that a member isn't somebody who agrees with us 100%. A member is somebody who's aware of what we believe, who's committed to being one heart, one mind with us and seeking the same things, and who commits not to teach contrary to what our church believes. So we have a number of members. I don't want to like make it sound all like 80%, but we have some people who are even in leadership who have a different view of sign gifts. It's not really a big deal. We have people who have led Bible studies where they're not totally, you know, they've never been in an eldership before, and you know are still trying to figure out how that works. But they're committed to kind of either teaching it, or if it's a conscience issue, it's pretty easy to avoid teaching what your conscience says. You know, I'm on mill and I really don't want to teach pre-mill. Like, you know, teach the Gospel of John rather than, you know, First Thess. So, and you'll avoid that. or we can bring in somebody for, you know, if your sign gifts, you know, 1 Corinthians 12 to 14, let's bring in somebody to do those weeks in Bible study. So we can work through those things for people, but membership and kind of gifting ability would be the major qualifications for that. We wouldn't just throw any member in. We would want them to be alongside an existing Bible study leader for a little bit to get a feel for how we want them to run. So it's not totally loose, I guess, in the way I portray it. But does that answer your question? Okay. Anything else? All right. Well, what makes us distinct? I don't remember the answer to this. Oh, yeah. Okay. What makes us distinct as a church? Well, church-wide discipling is kind of unique. There's not a... I'm trying to be helpful here, and this is not pride, okay? If you sense any pride in this, just repent and, you know, seek me afterwards and tell me to repent. This is not pride. This is more just, I'm trying to be helpful as you're thinking about, if you're newer here, if you're still thinking about, do I want to be here? What's unique about FBC as compared to other places in the Valley that do preach the gospel? We probably have a bigger church-wide emphasis on discipleship. Just meeting in D groups for a high accountability, transparency, change. That's kind of the goal of them. We do have a pretty good practice of equipping classes like this that happen first hour and second hour continually, 4 to 6 weeks long. And we want to continue to make those better. We also do things like the parenting conference that just happened. And kind of the whole goal of those things is to help people grow, to equip them in their faith and make them stronger. I don't know if this one's distinct or not, but I put it on there anyway. I never get to go hear other preachers in the Valley. So, and I don't really want to hear your take on their preaching. I'll just trust that one to you. And you can say I'm wrong. You can say I'm right. I don't care. Hopefully we here are being relevant. And I probably should say applicable, relevant and applicable expository preaching. Preaching that takes a section of the Bible, expands on what that means, and then applies it to life. That's kind of our goal. We're led by a plurality of elders. There's probably a couple other churches like that. I just don't know them around here, but I think that's fairly distinct. Now, this one I could almost be proud about and feel okay about it. We have a phenomenal student and college ministry, both sides of that. And, like, I feel that way a little bit because I love our leadership, but it's really stinking good. Like, they're very committed from junior high through high school to college. For a church of our size, it's unusual the people we have who are serving in there and providing leadership to it. Each one of those guys is very gifted. Stead is like an evangelist at the heart and just loves kids. Sean is incredible depth and really trained staff to get into students' lives. Eric is a great leader and preacher, has a total heart for the lost, a heart for mission. I mean, they're great ministry. So I think, you know, I don't know why anyone would go to any other group than those. So that now you can confront me. Okay, we're reformed and compassionate. Usually those don't go together. I just want to mention that. We're probably growing in both of those areas, but we don't want all the baggage that reformed people typically have, and we want to show the love of Christ to others, and that's kind of what our heart is. We have a high value on the electronic, which is kind of weird. And maybe that's the result of, well, I'll go on to that. It's probably partially the result of being office free. But we really deal a lot in email and through the website. That's our primary vehicle for information and access. We're striving to do most of our event registrations through online. Part of that, because that's the trend of things, part of that's because we don't have an office. And truthfully, we don't ever want an office currently. That's how we feel, at least Chris and I. it is like wonderfully freeing, and even to look, I mean, we call our office Starbucks because it's like a $4 rental fee anytime you go there, and it's great. It's a grind, has free internet. You know, there's nothing more you could need. Meetings, everything. It's wonderful. And basically, when we look at doing a building, it seems kind of sad to devote that much money and space to build something that we'd be in so little. And so we have talked pretty seriously about even one day, if God would provide a place, we don't really want offices. And so we will probably stay with a high value on electronic as a primary means of communication because of that mindset and heart. Kristen?
I just had a question, like, why no offices?
Why not? Did I just explain it?
I'm like, what if, like, to where do you go to facilitate, like, meetings, or, like, say I had needed to talk to a pastor about something, like, you go to Starbucks?
Yeah.
Yeah.
For meetings, oftentimes it's in somebody's house, which is just so much nicer.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
As far as church buildings go, like, do you guys have a stance on aesthetic? For instance, you know, like, you go to the
Should
church.
Should it be ugly or concrete?
Well, no, I'm just saying, like, when you go to Italy or Europe, the churches
are beautiful,
and they draw the soul towards the beauty of God. But nowadays, the only people who seem to build a nice building anymore are the Latter-day Saints.
Yeah.
Do you have a stance on aesthetic, appreciate, like, the beauty of the churches reflecting?
I'm going to tell you my personal stance, and then I'll try and address the group. I personally have a very conflicted feeling about it, in that I'm like of one heart incredibly with what you said about the value of aesthetics as a means to an aid to worship. The buildings can stand as a symbol for God's glory, that architecture can be used to enhance our worship. And at the same time, I have this conflict in me because I'm like, people sacrifice their finances, and buildings are stinking expensive, and to do the architectural flourishes, you almost have to be Catholic or Mormon to afford it. And so it's really a tough thing when I'm looking at, you know, do I want the embellishments that'll be beautiful, or do I want to send another million to Uganda? It's a really hard call heart-wise for me to affirm the pretty side that I love. You know what I mean? So that's where I'm at personally. And I would say most of the guys probably lean more on the latter side than the former. I'm probably the more aesthetic of the the guys. Chris's maxim would be maximum bulk, minimum price. So get as much as you can for as little as you can. And I really appreciate beautiful buildings. But I have a hard time saying, like, when Christ returns and I stand before him, I won't feel really good about saying, but God, it was pretty. So I don't know where to fall on that. I'm thankful not to have encountered it. I'm hoping we get to buy an existing building so I don't have to make that decision. That's a good question. And that probably leads us appropriately to the last one. We really like being portable most of the time. We like it in the sense that it's unencumbered. It allows actually a high degree of opportunities for service, not just set up and tear down, but a real feeling of ownership among people who are part of FBC, because there's a lot of people who are involved in a lot of levels. And that does diminish when you have a building. Basically, then you hire a maintenance guy and things are set up, and just the roles and the involvement of the body changes, and you become a little bit more of an owner than a tenant. Or a tenant that, I don't know how to say that right, a tenant rather than an owner in terms of feel. Where you show up, we pay, you know, it's our building, we're here. Now there's some great things in terms of presence and identity in a community that are real assets to having a building that I'm not trying to devalue. But we pay $4,000 a month for this place, which is phenomenal for what we get. And to get into anywhere around here is just, even to have a building with a lease would be more like triple or more, which is a cut in ministry and staff and missions that is so sad. And so we value how cheap it is to be portable is probably what I should say. More than anything else. And it's hard to want to avoid that. We'll talk down the road about, you know, what we are looking at and, you know, how we see God maybe getting us there. But right now, we really do enjoy being portable. And, you know, there will be things that we'll all be thankful for when we're in a building. And there'll be things that we'll be really sad to give up. Being portable though it has pains, has had a lot of really positive blessings.
Oops.
So we like doing it, except when there's nobody to do setup crew, except when things are breaking, you know. Those kind of things are a bummer. But most of the time, we like being portable. Any questions? You guys are so good. let's see. So what's happening next week? I'm trying to give you a little preview of things that are coming. We're going to cover kind of our six major priorities, often called the six E's. We're going to talk about mentality and culture and try and give you a little more insight again into who we are than what I just covered. We're also going to have, I'm trying to schedule out visits by elders, deacons, and ministry leaders through the class so that somebody will come in, just talk a little bit, answer any questions you have so that you're not just hearing me. Tony Miller is going to help me, so he'll cover some stuff next week as well. And we're just going to try and help, try to keep being helpful to you and getting a better feel of what's coming. If you have, I didn't put my email up there, but if you have questions that come up as you're thinking and processing, you know, do you ever sit in second hour, you sit in church or you sit down somewhere after this, and then you're like, bam, I wish I'd asked. Just write it down and email me. It's johnp@faith-bible.net. And most of y'all, I think, already have my email address, and you can... I'd be happy to make sure that it's included or that I email you a response. So that's kind of where things are headed next week. And I don't know how to get back to the beginning quickly. And kind of week by week, we're going to target one major section. This is going to be priorities. We're going to talk about ministries in coming weeks, about future, about how to get plugged in, those kind of things coming up. So any other questions?
Sorry.
Yeah, I love it. Thank you, Lord. You realize how soon we'd be done if you weren't asking questions?
Sorry.
It's great.
This,
I feel guilty.
In this evening's little pamphlet,
yeah.
Is your class listed in the equipping classes?
I have no idea.
It's on the flyer.
No, that's not the old classes. That's not very helpful, is it?
There's an insert.
But you're right. I see what you're saying, Lauren.
Okay.
I'll get it corrected.
No, the other thing
I'll talk to them. I'll beat them down.
Well, I just kind of, and I don't mean to criticize, but
please
I'm just
do.
Wondering. Sometimes I feel like information is passed amongst elders and deacons, and sometimes it comes down to us, as far as I've been here, kind of slowly, or like nobody really knows who's in charge of something or the other, or how you do a particular thing. Like, how do I sign up for a D group? Well, okay,
yeah.
Go talk to Kathy Richardson. If
yeah.
I were new here and I didn't know Kathy,
right.
I would not know who to go to.
Sure.
And then Kathy's response is basically, well, you know, check out the website. And I kind of feel like sometimes
that's
the
not very
information.
Helpful, is it? Yeah.
Like, I'm such a nosy, information-minded person that it's not helpful for me. And if someone weren't as ambitious and as driven necessarily, or maybe as ornery as me, they wouldn't get the information that would allow them to be in a class or to, you know, the D groups we've called, and it's kind of like, well, these two people are leading it, but the meeting time is, like, it's just starting, so maybe right now is a good, I don't know. Sometimes information seems ambiguous, but
okay.
For you who are in the church, you feel like it's being passed all the time.
No, I would say that I feel like we can do a better job when we're still growing in it. So I don't know if that's a comfort or a shameful admission. We're still seeking how to do that better, and I mean, even on the website, I noticed something today. Some parts of it are almost woefully out of date that need to be improved on, and. I think it's the function of being small.
Yeah.
And there's always being a lot to do, and communication is still hard.
Mm-hmm.
So I appreciate hearing that.
So who would be your webmaster? So the great area of, I mean, how do you, if someone were interested in that and were, you know, adroit at doing
yeah.
web designer, or even keeping yeah. information updated,
yeah.
do you say things like that? And
yeah.
I mean, I see in the bulletin, you know, lead guitarist. Do you say things like, hey, if you want to help with the...
Gotcha. No, but if somebody approached me on it...
Yeah.
So here's why. I'm just choosing the web one. Because there have been... I've had a lot of volunteers who really stink at that. And it's a lot more time and cost to me that I can't afford to help them get up to speed. And so for that particular role, it's something that's really, I would need somebody to step into it who's already got the skill set to do it. I'm still growing at delegation, and it's a hard cost to pay when you're training people. Even for the parenting conference, I had to do this, where you're training somebody how to do it with the recognition that it's taking me more time now, but will pay off down the road. And that's a hard thing when you're busy and running hard to say, I'm going to devote more time and have it come out not quite as nice. But knowing that down the road it'll come out better. So sometimes I have a hard time transitioning things that would be a benefit to the larger church if it wasn't done as well, but at least was more accurate. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so thanks for the encouragement, and I'll take that as a volunteer from you. So.
I actually have a question, not a criticism, but a question. just out of curiosity, numbers-wise, how many people attend the church and how many are members?
I don't know the member count. The rough number for people with kids, I think, is around 425, 450 right in there. Okay. So. Yeah.
I'm interested in what she's saying too, this idea, and I share her feelings, like, you know, if you want to find out something, go to the website.
Yeah.
And I tend to be more of a talk and a phone and face-to-face kind of guy. So if I were to list something on my card, I'm about to jump off a building and have somebody call me.
Yeah.
How long would
it take? We'd send you to the website.
Yeah, you'd yeah. How long does it take? I mean, do you have a team of people that are following up on those things? Or let's say I write and I say first time I check a box. Am I going to get a letter? Am I going to get a phone call?
No.
And one of the things, John, for me, it's been good when people have kind of reached out to me. Because otherwise, you know, you can kind of hide in the back and then nobody called me and, you know, the old nobody cared about me type thing. But in all seriousness, I mean, if I put something on, I mean, do you have a team of people that follow up and call?
Not until this last week. So, I should say we had...
I put that in for me.
Yeah. it's another area where I'm like, I just kind of... I have not had responsibility that way. I'll tell you the process. I mean, we got time. Basically, the cards come in. I get them transferred typically that today from one of the ushers or deacons will hand me all the cards. And tonight or tomorrow morning, I'll sort through the cards. And I think I'll tell you the new process rather than tell you what used to happen. The new process will be that, basically, people who are in charge of ministries get ones where it says, you know, I have questions about Kaleo. I just send it to Eric, that info. You know, I want to know what it means, more about what it means to be a Christian, or whatever. Those cards, or if it's just a plain new visitor card, those cards will go to, there's two to three different couples, and one person, and see, I'm not describing it well because it's new. Picture three couples, they rotate weeks. Couple one is going to get all the cards from this week, okay? And they're going to call them this week, hopefully in the next first day or two, answer questions, greet them, thank them for coming. 3 weeks later, they're going to just do a follow-up phone call. Alongside their initial card, that same information is going to be translated to a lady in our church who isn't able to serve much. She's just going to handwrite them a note that says, thanks for coming today. We love that you were able to join us. Just something friendly. And that's kind of going to be the plan for new visitors. Prayer requests go to one of the other, basically I stick them all in an envelope, go to one of the other, or is that right? Basically they go to one of the other elders, and then he types them up and emails them out to everybody. So that's kind of, I think I just hit all the things that happen with those cards. So that's the new plan for what's going to happen. Prayer requests have been really handled well, faithfully. The new visitor thing we have not followed up well on. And especially the, there's some book at the front table, and that gets like noted every month or two right now, and that's changing to where it's the digital thing. We're taking photos of it and then emailing the photos to the people. So, yeah. So we're trying to do that better. It early on depended on too few people. who were busy and doing too much, and they weren't they were having a hard time being faithful with that.
This may sound funny to you, but I'll open my mail more than I'll read my email.
Yeah.
Well, like, good. You know, so I email school, and I see that all the time. Uh-huh. But people say, I emailed you. Literally, I'll look at my home email once a week.
Okay.
But I'm online at school all the time. But if I get something in the mail, I'd open it right away.
Well, that's why we're part of why we're doing handwritten, too, is to make it a little more desirable to open.
So. I'm still with it.
I'm the 21st century.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't beat yourself too much up on that whole scenario, because when I first came, was it a couple of weeks, I think? I had filled out the box and asked that Pastor Chris contact my husband, and he got a call the next day.
Oh, good for him.
And you need to talk for a while.
I could only handle a few minutes. Yeah, he talked, and we just, you know, and maybe offered, let's just go out and have a cup of coffee.
Yeah. No, that's good.
Office.
I think it's more I think it's more new visitors who just come and say, this is, you know, I just checked this out, and I just want information on small groups. I had one guy who who was in my D group, which is really funny, and I would see his card come through that would say, like, I want information about midweek Bible studies. And it came through like 3 weeks in a row, and I'd be sending it to this other individual. And then, you know, my friend would ask me in D group, how come I haven't gotten a call yet? I don't know, you know. And so we have some success stories and some not so. So we're trying to do better at that.
Actually, mine too was I was sending my son here, and I just wanted to talk to the pastor to get to know him, mm-hmm. because my son was coming here. So even if we actually weren't even coming here yet.
Yeah.
And he called the next day.
Oh, I mean, great.
I was impressed with that.
Yeah.
I don't remember if this is a subject that you're going to talk about, but what is the purpose of membership?
Yeah, that will come up a different week.
Okay.
So I'm going to save it.
Okay. I remembered that whole thing.
Yeah, that's good.
I mean, you have to come back.
The Kalea people were very good about getting back to me.
Oh, excellent.
For my son, I asked them.
Yeah, questions. For Grant, right?
He, yeah, he had to call.
Oh, I'm glad.
So that was good.
That's encouraging.
Yeah. You know what I think is... a greater testimony to the church and its communication is the first day I came here, my son Wes is the drummer, and Tony was still worship on the worship team at our old church, and I walked in, and of course he bailed on me, and I'm just sitting there not knowing anybody, and I probably had four or five people come up to me before church and introduce themselves to me, and then after church come and talk to me.
Yeah.
And I was so impressed with that, because I was obviously not familiar with the church, and he literally just left me as he went and talked to all his friends. But I had people stop me and come up to me multiple times, and I told my husband, I said, you know, that really impressed me that these people went out of their way to connect to somebody new, because I'm sure many of you, if you've been in other churches, that doesn't always happen.
That's really true, and I'm thankful for that. I mean, it's funny, when we talk about being electronic and office-free and all that, it's not a devaluing of relationship or personal. I mean, we really are not seeking to be impersonal. We really, really value the relational side and the being loving and friendly as much as possible. And so we got to reach out to people like Rob, who only check their email once a week. So. No, that's good. And if you are interested in ways that we communicate and you're not signed up on, like, the news list, which is where information about this class came out, you probably are since you're all here. And our communication on this was particularly poor because of a late coming decision. But that would be on faith-bible.net/updates, and kind of all the email lists are listed there and easy to subscribe to.
I have one question. On the website, you have the spot up top for, like, members only or the...
Yeah.
You know, you ask for a password. How does somebody ever get that?
Get them to become a member.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there's something hidden back there.
I know, that's the lure. The secret area, yeah.
That's where they show you the secret handshake.
All the Starbucks discount stuff is back there. Yeah, just Just wait. It's better. So, no, what's back there, just so that there's no mystery and it's nice, is there's an online church directory that rather than have like people's address and phone number and email stuff that's just readily available on the front page, we had to lock it down some way so that it couldn't be accessed by spammers. So that's behind the member area. And then finance update stuff on where we're at as a church financially is up behind there too. So yeah, so that's, I think that's all there is. Sometimes there's like, you know, when we had the parenting conference and there's discounts for FBC people, and basically you had that card that listed the website address that did that. In the members area, there was like a direct link, but that was only, it only worked out that could come through there. So we are actually also moving towards having a online giving option, but that won't be, I don't think that'll be behind the members area. So.
Yeah, you'll take money up front too.
So, but it's just funny. There have been a number of people who've really requested. It'd be so nice if we could give online, because I hardly ever use checks anymore. And so it's just, that's part of us being like, okay, you know, I mean, in one sense, giving is a form of worship. It doesn't mean like it has to be part of Sunday morning worship. Because a lot of times you choose to give based on a conversation with your spouse or whoever, and so, or you're doing like, I want to, you know, do a scholarship for somebody for youth camp or whatever, and then you'd make that decision and you forget to bring a checkbook for the next 3 weeks. And so it kind of enables that to happen easily. So that's going to happen.
I say you take it to the next step and just do an auto debit.
You're the Mormon.
That would be, yeah. The state of.
That's how they can afford that really neat building.
Yeah. So, right. Obviously, it's time to end this class. So, thank y'all for coming. Let me pray for your time of worship and let you be free.